It's Jimbo Times. Hey, what is going on, Los Angeles? It's J.Dot, T.Dot, and I hope that you are very well. Today is December 29th, 2023, and that is exactly right. We are just a couple of days away from a brand new year. And I gotta congratulate you on it. It's been a solid run, and we've gotten through a lot together. And yet there is still significantly more to do, especially with the elections coming up. And so this episode is very much looking to 2024 and its various elections, and we will definitely get into that. But before then, I want to give major ups to Eddie Aguirre of the Social Primate podcast. Eddie and I got together earlier this week, and we hopped on a podcast together, the last podcast of the Social Primate show for this year. And so it was really a whole lot of fun. I definitely want to encourage the Los Cuentos listenership to go over to the Social Primate podcast. The link is in the show notes. Hear my convo with Eddie. It was just the best way to round out this year for yours truly. So lots and lots of love for it. And please do check it out right after this episode. I totally recommend it. So with that said, before we get into an election review for 2024, that is specifically for LA City Council as well as LAUSD seats, I want to take a moment to make a quick blurb of a handful of stories out there. And we're not going to go too far into the details for these stories, but we'll get just enough through so that we can think about what they mean for us, especially as this year closes and as we move on to new things, but also lots of old business, one might say, in 2024. So the first story is all about your money and my money and working class communities' money. And so let's begin with our first story by thinking a little bit about this holiday season. Let's say that you were scouring the web and visiting as many stores as you could, and yet somehow you still weren't able to find the gift that you wanted for whoever you may be gifting. And I, JT, the LA storyteller, come up to you with my backpack and I say, hey, could $50 trillion make a difference for your gift today? And the reason I bring this up is because basically the American worker or workers in the United States from about 1975 through 2020 have done just that, except that what we've done is we've given away $50 trillion, not to just anyone, but we've given it to the top 0.01%. A number of about 33,000 people in the United States, which is like some small town somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And what I mean by this is that there was a study conducted and just about completed in 2020 that showed that from about 1975 through just the pandemic, the American economy basically took about $50 trillion from everyday paychecks, let's say, working people's paychecks, and ushered them up to the executive class. And so to be certain, this is due to a series of deregulatory policies that we began implementing in the United States from just about the 1970s onward. It began with the Nixon administration and was carried on by the Ford administration and was certainly developed further by the Carter administration, including when Jimmy Carter actually deregulated the airlines and also deregulated oil and other forms of transportation, that is, other corporations in these markets. And it was certainly developed further by Ronald Reagan And it wasn't significantly shifted by Bush or by Clinton or by W or by Obama, and certainly not by Trump either. And so this is all to say that about 90% of workers out there from 1975 through 2020 are $50 trillion poorer than we would have been had these deregulatory policies not been implemented and developed, or had we done something over the past two decades at the very least, including through the 2008 recession when we had the chance. And so I've got a link for it in the show notes so that you can learn a little further about how households everywhere, including single households and also family households, about how the vast majority of workers in the United States all earn less today than we would have had we simply kept these corporations under substantial regulations instead of letting them determine their own stock values and their own bonuses and their own prices on the consumer and so on and so forth. You've got to hear all about it because, hey, I suppose that the next 50 years are up for grabs somehow. Certainly, if we want the next generation and our families and our communities to avoid such a massive deficit, certainly we should learn how we got here first and how we're going to work our way out of it, how we're going to demand our way out of it, because we are, at the very least, the 90% through this country and through this economic juggernaut. So go check it out for yourself on the show notes. I think it'll be well worth your time. Okay, the second story that I want to bring to your attention is concerning homelessness in the United States. That just earlier this December, the Housing and Urban Development Department of the United States submitted its report to Congress concerning homelessness and the amount of people who are homeless in the United States on any single night. And it turns out that from 2022 through 2023, the United States saw a 12% increase in homelessness, actually. And so we now have, according to this report, somewhere in the range of at least 653,000 homeless people all across the United States, in any and every state that you can name, who are unsheltered or unhoused on any given night. And so just let that sink in for a moment. The United States, as of this year, has more unhoused and unsheltered people than at any point in the count's history, the count having started in 2007. And so we are very much, in a strange way, working our way back to the 1930s somehow. And we are very much working our way back to mounds of homelessness and people on the edge, people who are just a paycheck away from being unable to pay their rent. And of course, here in the city of Los Angeles, we had the rent increases that LA City Council approved for RSO units, which begins this February, along with back rent, as council member Hernandez of District 1 noted to us, beginning this February. And so the starkness and the gravity of the situation is going to continue to deepen out there. It's going to continue to intensify. And goodness gracious, could we all use $50 trillion right about now? Because I think it's very clear just how much that would come in handy. But it is certainly an indictment of the United States that so many people are on these streets, including not just individuals, but people and their families, and that we have such a long way to go before we can get people indoors and protected as it is their right to be, certainly in the wealthiest country on earth. So go ahead and read more about it if you so choose. The link is in the show notes. And yeah, that's what's going on. That's simply what we're working with right now. And this is what we are going to have to continue to amp up the pressure on as these various elections loom for us in March and once again in November. Okay, with that said, our third story for the blurbs is pertaining to the Victorville 8, also known as the Justice 8, or these 8 Latinx activists who were actually arrested in the early hours of December 14th and who have been incarcerated in the city of Victorville, military tribunal style, that is to say, without bail for 2 weeks plus and counting. And that's right, these folks spent the Christmas holiday and then some completely taken from their families, completely taken from their homes, and held without bail at the request of the sheriff's offices in San Bernardino County, all because the sheriff's offices there claim that these individuals, these Latinx activists known for standing up for street vendors in and around the Inland Empire and the San Bernardino County area and also beyond, are allegedly a threat to the public good, even though their work, that is to say their activism, revolves around the defense of people such as the street vendors who are serving the public good, who present the exact opposite of danger, that is, because they are providing a public service, that is, food for the culture and from the culture to the broader community. And so I want to name these activists for a moment just to be sure, because I think it's a small gesture and a small acknowledgement that JT the LA Storyteller can make at this point out here in central LA, quite removed to a significant extent from San Bernardino County, but also not, because of course their arrest, their unjust arrest, can happen to anyone, because as it is the case with the people of Palestine, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And so I want to make a quick name drop of these activists so that you all know who they are and how you may support if the spirit so moves you. And I think it should, because when we get into the details, as we were saying with Lupe, the LAUSD teacher from Oxnard, who has also been taken to court for standing up for her beliefs and for standing up for her culture, justice must prevail. And we are going to make sure of it by showing up for each other. So this is JT the LA Storyteller's very humble, very small way of showing up for the Justice 8 or the Victorville 8, only one of whom has been released since this cruel and unusual and entirely unjustified raid upon their homes. That is, there was a bail hearing on Thursday, December 28th, and through that bail hearing, only one of the 8 activists was granted bail. The rest are actually still in jail and will remain so until the next hearing. That's exactly right. So learn more about it. You can do so through the show notes. And these are the names of the Victorville 8 or the Justice 8 who we call for the immediate release of and who we demand the San Bernardino County Sheriffs drop all counts against immediately. Okay, the first is Alex Enamorado, 36 years old, from Upland. Wendy Lujan, 40 years old, of Upland. David Chavez, 28 years old, of Riverside. Stephanie Amezquita, 33 years old, of San Bernardino. Guyit Eder Acevedo, 30 years old, of San Bernardino. Edwin Pena, 26 years old, of Los Angeles. Fernando Lopez, 44 years old, of Los Angeles. Vanessa Carrasco, 40 years old, of Ontario. As you can see, these are all young professionals, none over the age of 40. They are all Latinx, and they are all activists who stand up fiercely for their community. You can go ahead and learn more through the show notes, and yours truly will keep you posted as to developments in this case, from the city of Los Angeles all the way through the entirety of San Bernardino County. Justice must and will prevail. We will see to it that you are informed as to how you can support the Justice 8 to that effect. Okay, and with that said, I want to move on to the final plug, the final blurb for your consideration, and especially with respect to this 2023, is concerning the voting rate. Because, of course, we're talking about elections through this podcast episode, and we're talking about what's going down in 2024. And so with that said, you know that I have to make a note of the Public Policy Institute of California and what they have noted as a drop-off for turnout rates between voting turnouts in 2020 and voting turnouts in 2022. And what you have to know, more than anything else, is that mostly from 2020 through 2022, the communities that turned out in smaller and smaller shares were actually communities of color, including Asian American, African American, and Latinx communities. The Latinx community in particular saw the biggest drop off by about 37 points. This was followed by the Asian American community, which had a drop off of about 34 to 35 points. And that was followed by the African American community, which had the smallest drop off rate for communities of color at about 29%. White and older communities, on the other hand, saw a drop off rate of about 22%. So, in truth, everyone had a smaller turnout because going from a presidential to a non-presidential year simply does that all the time. But, of course, it is concerning to policymakers and communities out there whose goal is to get more participation from the state's registered voters, including because communities of color in the state of California already make up 60% of the population here. And so with that being the case, 6 out of 10 ballots during any and every election going forward should be filled out by members from these communities. That is what justice and equity can and needs to look like. And yet, when we have these kinds of drop-off rates, it's clear that there is more work to be done. Of course, there are so many different factors going into a drop-off rate. There are so many different things. But if we want to take a wild guess as to just why this may be for communities of color, naturally, it's because the political duopoly and the corporatocracy that most working communities of color already know is vastly uninterested in working people actually exercising their vote has just exhausted these folks. It has just made it so that folks completely tune out, given that they already know that the system is not gamed for fairness and it's not gamed for working people. Instead, they know that it's gamed for the billionaire techies and for the 1% and for all those who had a hand in taking our $50 trillion from the workers all the way up to the top, where it has stayed and where it continues to proliferate only in their interest. And so we can get into more details here, but I also want you to know that in terms of age, the biggest drop-off rates between 2020 and 2022, that is in terms of voter turnout, took place among 18 to 24-year-olds, followed by 25 to 34-year-olds, followed by 35 to 44-year-olds, followed by 45 to 54-year-olds. You get where we're going here. So the voters who have remained the most consistent from 2020 through 2022 and who we can count on to show up yet again in 2024 tend to be older. They also tend to be whiter. And so that is the game that we continue to face, including in California, where communities of color are abound. So this is what the road ahead for us entails. Additionally, or lastly, drop-off fell more for women than it did for men. And so this is another thing to keep in mind, is the effect of gender and the way that systems of patriarchy continue dominating the political arena out there, and the way that women, including women of color, just tune out because it's not for them. It's not about them. It doesn't speak to them. And so especially because they've already got work in front of them, they take care of that and not the ballot. But let me not get too carried away here. I still have to talk about elections. It's just that I had to get these stories to the Los Cuentos listenership for your consideration, because how could I not? It's all intersecting. It's all intersecting in Los Angeles and Los Angeles County and Southern California. So there you have it. Now you know. We gotta let the city know. Okay, with all that through now, let's take a quick break. And once we come back, let's get into elections to watch out for this 2024 including because we have just 38 days left before mail-in ballots reach voters all across LA County, and with respect to the top fundraisers through September 2023 or quarter three. Okay, let me get a sip of water and then we'll break it down. Hey, Los Angeles, I hope you're enjoying this conversation as much as I am. I just want to take a moment to invite you to my Patreon channel, which supports JT the LA Storyteller podcast in more ways than one, and which also provides just a little more from each convo. And of course, this is because it takes a little bit of work to put this podcast together, including research and reaching out to folks and scheduling things. And then studio time, editing time, finally publishing, and then a little bit of marketing time. And the Patreon channel is just the best way to support all of that, to support independent storytelling in LA by JT the LA Storyteller. So I would love your support, and I can give you my word that it's going to be more than worth it. Now, back to the show. Okay, cool. Be sure to stay hydrated out there, especially if you are a podcaster. With this said, let's go ahead and get into 2024 elections and LAUSD races to watch out for in terms of fundraising. And so what we'll do is go through a quick list of these various offices up for election and the folks who have raised the most funds and who you're probably going to be hearing some more about in January and certainly through February, especially with just 38 days to go as of the time of this recording. How exciting, how frightening, how anxiety-inducing, and yet that's what it is. Especially if you're a little bit of a stats geek and the like, you are totally geeking out right now. I know I am. Okay, without further ado, let's go ahead and start off with LA City Council District 2. LA City Council District 2 neighborhoods include North Hollywood, Studio City, Sun Valley, Toluca Lake, Valley Glen, Valley Village, and Van Nuys. And so the top three fundraisers for this upcoming election to replace Paul Krikorian in City 2 are Adrian Nazarian at $540,000 or $541,000 so far. He's endorsed by Mayor Bass, LA County Sheriff Luna, and outgoing CD2 rep Paul Krikorian. So Adrian was a former staffer for Paul Krikorian and was also a California Assembly member. He therefore definitely has quite some familiarity with the political process, and at nearly double what the second in place fundraiser has garnered so far, he is ahead of the pack, at least as of quarter three. We'll see how that goes once Q4 reports are out, but for now, second up is Sam Kaboushian, also Armenian American. I should have mentioned that Adrian Nazarian is Armenian American, as is Sam Kaboushian. Sam Kaboushian has raised $293,000 so far, almost 300K, and he's been endorsed by former LA City Attorney Carmen Nuke Trutnik. And that was definitely before my time, for sure. Carmen Trutnik, I do not know, but I do know that Heidi Feldman Soto is the current LA City Attorney, and that before her, it was Mike Feuer. I don't know if Trutnik was before Mike. We'll have to double check that. Do reach out if you know something I don't, but that was one of the more significant endorsers I could find for Kaboushian so far. And third, and in third place for CD2, I had to get one more in there, is Manuel Gomez. Manuel Gomez has raised 140K so far, and he was actually endorsed by the late Cindy Montañez, the former leader of the San Fernando Valley, who unexpectedly passed away earlier this year. In fact, I wish we could have gotten an episode through with respect to Montañez. I will look to actually get that taken care of in 2024, but shout out to her and Manuel Gomez. I think it has to be an honor to know that she was able to make this endorsement before her untimely passing. There we have it. Victor Narro of the UCLA Labor Center has also endorsed Gomez. as has Ed Begley Jr., the actor and environmental rights activist, and the Muslim Democratic Club of Southern California. These are the top three for LA City Council District 2, and a quote I'd like to leave you all with concerning the election for this side of the city is from the LAT. They noted in an article earlier this year that it's an established fact that Armenian American voters turn out in big numbers for LA elections. In the recent City Council District 6 primary race, Armenian Americans made up about 12% of all those who returned ballots, despite making up about 4% of the district's voting population. And so with that in mind, given Nazarian's candidacy as well as Kabushian's candidacy, I think we will once again see substantial turnout from the Armenian American community. And because this is an open seat, because there is no incumbent, I see it getting down to the top two, and it has to be between these three, at least given the numbers they've raised so far, which definitely translates into the number of staff they can hire on and the number of volunteers they can pull in to their team so as to reach out to voters and so on and so forth. We'll see how that goes, but that's City 2 for you. Okay, LA City Council District 4. Neighborhoods in City 4 include Los Feliz, Hollywood Hills, Encino, Sherman Oaks, parts of Reseda, Silver Lake, Studio City, and Van Nuys. And this is the seat currently represented by Nithya Raman. She is being challenged for the seat by Ethan Weaver. And to be sure, Nithya Raman, the incumbent, has raised $254,000 as of quarter three, and Ethan Weaver has rallied on his part to raise at least $141,000. But to be certain, Nithya Raman has been endorsed by Mayor Bass, as well as Supervisor for the First District, Hilda Solis, as well as the Democratic Party of the San Fernando Valley. Ethan Weaver, on the other hand, or by contrast, has been endorsed by the LA Police Protective League, by the United Firefighters of LA City, and by the Association for LA Deputy Sheriff. And so there's definitely kind of an asymmetrical situation going on there. And Nithya Raman, as some of y'all might know, unseated an incumbent herself about 4 years ago when she beat David Ryu to represent the 4th District. It's also the case that the 4th District was the most impacted by the redistricting commission and the new maps that were drawn to reshape LA City Council representation for the next 10 years. And so Nithya Raman, as a freshman council member at the time of the redistricting commission's recommendations, simply had to bite the bullet and has had to make her way to reach out to new communities that were placed on her desk very much at the last minute because of the inadequacies of the redistricting process and because of the zero-sum nature of the process just as well. So a lot going on in this race for sure. And one quote that I really want to get out there with respect to the 4th District and its representation is from none other than former council member Mike Bonin. Because Mike Bonin was at a recent meeting of the LA Democratic Party, and he had a few words about how the endorsement committee at the LA Democratic Party somehow recommended that the LA Democratic Party rally behind Weaver and endorse him over Nithya. This is what Mike had to say regarding the recommendation. Quote, "It was shocking that the party even entertained the idea of not backing Raman, a progressive champion and architect of historic renter protections, successful homelessness strategies, climate resilience policies, and ethics reform. The first Asian American woman on the LA Council, Raman in 2020 won more votes than any council candidate in the history of the city, unseating an incumbent and heralding a new wave of grassroots progressive politics in LA. Members overwhelmingly repudiated the endorsement committee, supporting Raman with 73% of the vote. It was the first of three big votes where members overturned the committee's work," unquote. And so, yeah, kind of a tricky situation with the LA Democratic Party there. But ultimately, the party made the decision that is most consistent with democratic values or progressive values in the city of LA. And so we will see how this goes through Q4. I will definitely make sure you know. I will definitely make sure to let the city know. Okay, as for LA City Council District 6, this actually had a special election. Oh, let me note the neighborhoods to be sure. Neighborhoods in CD6 include Lake Balboa, Van Nuys, Panorama City, Arleta, North Hills, North Hollywood, and Sun Valley. But to be certain, CD6 is the seat formerly held by Nuri Martinez, who resigned after the infamous leaked recordings, which we have spoken about at length on this podcast and more, specifically through K-Town is OK, if you haven't given it a listen yet. But given that, there was actually a special election held earlier this year in June, through which Imelda Padilla became the new council member representative for CD6. And so I am not certain yet as to whether CD6 will be on the ballot for this March, because the special election was for Padilla to hold the seat from 2023 all the way up to December 2024. And so actually, I guess it is the case that her name should show up on the ballot after all, because these elections are for the 2024 through 2028 term. So I guess we should be seeing Padilla, but I'll confirm that in due time. And to be sure, while this may be the case, it's also true that right now Imelda Padilla is far and away in the lead for the seat, because as of Q3 for 2023 or September 30th, 2023, Imelda Padilla is the only one to have disclosed any fundraising or any campaign contributions for another term at or with CD6. And so given that this is the case, Imelda Padilla is more than likely to just phone it in, so to speak, because there are no real challengers for it. The special election has been held, and it's very likely that she will just remain the representative for these neighborhoods in CD6 going all the way up into 2028. Nonetheless, there is a quote here by Imelda Padilla that I want to share for your consideration. And so this is from the LA Daily News not long after her victory and then the certification of the results at the LA City Council. Imelda Padilla said, quote, "I've been talking a lot on my campaign trail about how I'm not a fan of policy being done in a very zero-sum way. I told my constituents that I was going to come, be here, and be intentional with what I do, not just going to do things because they're popular or because it happens to be what's sensational at the time." Unquote. And so I hope that we can all keep this in mind as Imelda Padilla's tenure at LA City Council continues and develops, because I believe it should be key. Okay, with that said, we've got Council District 8 to account for just as well. And Council District 8, or neighborhoods in Council District 8, include Vermont Knolls, King Estates, Canterbury Knolls, Park Mesa Heights, Baldwin Hills, Hyde Park, Chesterfield Square, Vermont Vista, Green Meadows, View Heights, and West Park Terrace, as well as the Crenshaw area, including the Crenshaw-Slauson area slash neighborhood, where Nipsey Hussle made so much of a name for himself and the community. And in this race, somewhat similarly to the situation in CD6, Marquise Harris-Dawson, who is the incumbent, is far and away the only real fundraiser to account for here. Marquise Harris-Dawson has raised at least $177,000 for his reelection for this office, and this should be Marquise Harris-Dawson's third and final term given term limits, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, especially because Marquise Harris-Dawson is now the chair of the Planning and Land Use and Management Committee at LA City Hall, or the committee where all of these various housing projects and proposed housing developments have to go in order to be approved and thus get started. To be certain, Marquise Harris-Dawson was previously endorsed by Congressman Bass, that is before she was the mayor, as well as former Mayor Garcetti and CD2's Paul Krikorian. And one quote that I would like to make sure is on our radar with respect to MHD and CD8 is actually from our conversation for JT the LA Storyteller podcast not long ago in 2022, in which Marquise Harris-Dawson said, quote, "Most of us, when we finally get to a place where we can afford to buy a house in the neighborhood we want, we're buying there because we like the neighborhood the way it is. When the house you live in got built, the people around it were probably against it. And if we always did that, California and Los Angeles and Southern California would be one giant orange grove. So we've got to ask if development can be done in a way that actually makes it better for everyone." And so just keep that in mind as we consider the ongoing needs for housing in Los Angeles, including taller housing or upward or vertical housing that is building up through the city of LA, including in neighborhoods where historically that hasn't been the case, because this is exactly, yes, how the city develops, yes, how the city changes, but yes, how the city hangs on, given all of the needs, that is the housing needs that its residents have in order to live and work and also remain here. Okay with you? Okay with JT. Moving on, Council District 10 is next on the list. And Council District 10 is the seat formerly held by Mark Ridley Thomas before his indictment and conviction on charges of bribery. You can go ahead and read the details for yourself through the show notes. But for now, just know that Council District 10 includes the neighborhoods of Arlington Heights, Koreatown, Mid-City, Palms, South Robertson, West Adams, and the Wilshire Center. And unlike in CD6 or CD8, here there are at least three different top fundraisers. And so the first of our top three fundraisers for CD10 as of Q3 is Grace U. Grace U has actually raised at least $186,000, nearly $187,000, in her effort to claim this seat. And Grace U is endorsed by former LA City Controller, City Council member, and California Inspector General Laura Chick. I also understand that this is at least Grace U's second attempt for the office, because she did actually challenge Mark Ridley Thomas when he ran for the seat some 3 or 4 years ago. And so I think her lead in terms of fundraising is definitely a testament to that, because it means that she's outraised even the incumbent for the seat, Heather Hutt. And so to be sure, Heather Hutt is second in place for fundraising for Council District 10 in 2024 as of quarter three, or September 30th, 2023, with $174,000, almost $175,000. She has been endorsed by the Hollywood Chamber PAC, and she was also dual endorsed along with Reverend Eddie Anderson by Councilmember District 1 Representative Eunices Hernandez, which she noted on JT the LA Storyteller podcast just a couple of episodes ago. And so they're very close here. They're very close here. But there's at least one more candidate for the race who's also really close. And I mean just within hundreds of dollars of Heather Hutt for second place as of Q3. And that is Reginald Jones Sawyer, the assembly member, who has been endorsed by the LA County Federation of Labor, as well as Adam Schiff, the candidate for California's federal Senate seat himself. So all three of these candidates are really close in terms of fundraising, and it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out through January and February. Once again, just in case you skipped a few parts through the episode, there are just 38 days as of December 29th, 2023, before mail-in ballots get out to mailboxes. And so in just a little over a month and a week, folks are going to get to make their choice here. And I think it's going to come down to the top two. I think it's going to lead to a runoff in November. And I'm really not sure right now just who those top two are going to be. But keep that in mind if you're in the K-Town
or the Mid-City or the West Adams or South Robertson neighborhoods and then some. You can get involved. These are, of course, elections which are supposed to represent you and your community. They're not taking place just because, and they absolutely can benefit from your involvement somehow. Let me know if you need support in that, and by all means. And to be sure, with respect to a quote for Council District 10, I want to share some words by Elizabeth Chu of the LA Public Press, who actually attended a forum between these candidates and whose coverage you can actually see more of through my show notes. But for now, just keep this in mind. When these candidates were asked about issues specific to Koreatown that should be top of mind for any future LA CD10 representative, Elizabeth Chu noted that, quote, Jones Sawyer says he notices traffic was very heavy in K-Town, so he wants to update the community plan. And he thinks the community can be a destination almost like LA Live, unquote. Vasquez, that is Dulce Vasquez, says she is a former K-Town resident, says there needs to be more equitable trash pickup that matches the density, wants more trees, safe parks to walk dogs, wants more open space, arts, and culture, unquote. And finally, quote, Yu says she thinks K-Town wants a safe community, and she wants social workers to come out rather than police responding to incidences, as with programs like Circle. Another priority is affordable housing, she said, unquote. All right, and so just keep those in mind when it comes to CD 10. Okay, as for Council District 12, very similar to CD 6 and CD 8, there's really just one candidate for the seat right now, and that is John Lee, who has raised at least $308,000 for his candidacy. And oh, to be sure, Council District 12's neighborhoods include Chatsworth, Granada Hills, Northridge, Porter Ranch, West Hills, North Hills, and Reseda. And so that's going to be a lot of mailers, and that's going to be maybe even a handful of TV ads out there or so, but it really is not very necessary because there are no serious challengers, given that we've already passed the final date for folks running for office to turn in their signatures and qualify to get onto the ballot. And so even though John Lee is not seriously challenged for this seat, I still have a quote that I think is important to recall. And so this is actually once again from the LA Public Press. The LA Public Press noted that, quote, earlier in October, the Ethics Commission served John Lee with a report accusing him of a slew of ethics violations in 2016 and 2017, stemming from a dinner in Los Angeles, a Koreatown poker night, and a Las Vegas bash that was organized to celebrate Lee leaving his position as chief of staff to then council member Mitchell Englander. The gifts Lee is accused of accepting include thousands of dollars in bottle service, dinner, hotel rooms, casino chips, and other gifts from a businessman who does business related to major development projects in Los Angeles and a real estate developer who runs an architectural firm. The lawsuit, filed in the California Superior Court, Los Angeles on October 17th, comes as the Ethics Commission is set to weigh in on how to move forward with its case against Lee, the details of which were revealed by investigators for the commission in an accusation report released on October 2nd. Unquote. Okay, so yeah, very tricky situation there because John Lee is actually suing the LA Ethics Commission while the LA Ethics Commission is weighing out how to handle this inappropriate behavior by the LA City Council members. So quite a lot there, and I think one should definitely stay tuned, especially if you're in Chatsworth or Granada Hills or Northridge, Porter Ranch, West or North Hills, and the city of Reseda. Okay, moving on, we've got the final LA City Council district seat to account for, and that is Council District 14. Council District 14 is the seat currently represented by Kevin De Leon, who, of course, was also recorded making crude remarks about Mike Bonin's son in that leaked audio from last year. And so this is a very interesting situation now, to be sure. If you have tuned into this episode strictly to get the lowdown on CD 14, I totally feel you because, yes, to be certain, Kevin De Leon is running for re-election in CD14. And yet he's actually in third place in terms of fundraising, which of course would be the case after the sort of year that he has had given these leaked recordings and more. But to be certain, CD14 is representing the downtown LA area, including Skid Row. It also represents Boyle Heights, Eagle Rock, Highland Park, El Sereno, Garvanza, Glassell Park, Lincoln Heights, and parts of Highland Park, just as Isabel Jurado said, as well as Monterey Hills. All right. And first in place in terms of fundraising for CD14 in 2024 is Miguel Santiago, currently an assembly member, I believe, for at least the last 10 years. I do have to note that prior to this race, I had not heard of Santiago before, but as of September 30th, 2023, he has raised at least $359,000, nearly $360,000 for his candidacy for CD14. So pretty much storming the place and really raking it in terms of campaign contributions. And so this has landed him in first place for the race, at least as of Q3. Second in place is Wendy Carrillo, who has also served as an assembly member for about the past 3 to 4 years, and who has also had a rocky year. Nonetheless, Wendy Carrillo is second in terms of fundraising for CD14 in 2024 at $180,000, almost $181,000, at least as of Q3. Kevin De Leon is in third place at $117,000, and Isabel Jurado is fourth at $101,000, at least as of September of 2023. But as Jurado noted in our podcast episode with her, that should be at least $150,000. And let's get through a couple of endorsements for these various candidates, actually, because I think that's definitely relevant to keep in mind here. Santiago has been endorsed by the LA County Federation of Labor, as well as the LA County Democratic Party, as well as the LA Area Chamber of Commerce. Wendy Carrillo, at least just earlier this 2023, noted endorsements from Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon, as well as from former LA Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. Kevin De Leon, on the other hand, I was unable to find any endorsements for. I just have to keep it real with you. I am certain that folks are out there making endorsements for KDL somehow, but going to his website for the candidacy, there just isn't much to draw from. And so, yeah, it's kind of a mission. And so if the Los Cuentos listeners out there know of any endorsements that I should know on here and through JimboTimes.com, do let it be known. Okay, as for Isabel Jurado has been endorsed by CD1 Representative Eunices Hernandez, as well as by LAUSD Board President Jackie Goldberg, and by Culver City Mayor Emeritus Dr. Daniel Wayne Lee. And so of these four candidates, the only outsider within range in terms of fundraiser and the only first-time candidate for office is, of course, Isabel Jurado. Now, we spoke with Isabel for JT the LA Storyteller podcast just a couple of weeks ago, and you should understand that she is a tenants' rights attorney as well as a mom in and from Highland Park, and that she is making a whole lot of inroads through CD14, and that she's still looking for volunteers. And so if you're interested in really challenging the establishment and supporting grassroots candidacies as well as non-corporate backed candidacies at LA City Hall, then you may want to reach out to Isabel Jurado and her team, because I know that they're hitting the ground running and that they need as much support as they can get, especially for CD14, such an important seat for all of our communities. In a way, really, we all need CD14 to get this. This is also something that Councilmember Hernandez noted during our most recent discussion. And so stay vigilant and stay tuned on this. 100%, we will have updates. All right, that does it for all. How many seats did we count, actually? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 7 different seats. Wow, for sure. Okay, that does it for 7 different seats at LA City Hall. And for LAUSD, there are at least 4. And so if the LAUSD elections aren't really your jam, but you still have to vote anyway, yours truly will not be offended if you just skip ahead a little bit to whichever district you happen to be in. To be certain, I'm getting through at least 4 different seats up for grabs at LAUSD this 2023, but I should make a brief note that just earlier this week, I read through an article noting that this LA City Hall reform and LA City Hall governance committee outside of LA City Hall, this sort of ad hoc committee by various researchers and professors at the UC and Cal State and also at Loyola Marymount University, they have recommended, among other things, that LA City Hall or LA City Council seats should definitely be expanded, and that LAUSD should also be broken up into more districts so that more voters and communities have a more balanced representation when it comes to their schools in LA. And so, yeah, just a quick blurb on it. If you want to go and read more, you can check it out through the show notes. But for now, let's see who's in the lead for LAUSD's first district. The first district covers a broad area from Mid-City to Pio Pico to the West Athens area and more. And the top 2 fundraisers for this seat include Dwayne Davis as well as Didi Watts. Dwayne Davis has pulled in about $33,000 for the seat and is endorsed by former LAUSD superintendent Dr. Ramon C. Cortinez. Didi Watts, on the other hand, has pulled in $32,000, almost $33,000, and has been endorsed by LAUSD District Representative Nick Melvoin, as well as LAUSD District 7 Representative Tanya Ortiz Franklin. And so, yet again, this looks like another battle between the teachers' unions as well as the charter schools. And so if you know more about these candidates, or if you are one of these candidates and you want to come on to JT the LA Storyteller podcast to tell your side of the story, let's do it. Let's make it happen. I am here for it. No quotes for LAUSD district seats, but check back not long from now via jimbotimes.com, and we just might have a few quotes to keep in mind when it comes to these seats for your consideration. Okay, as for LAUSD District 3, which covers a broad area encompassing most of the West San Fernando Valley, we've got Dan Chang, who's pulled in $108,000 so far, and who has been endorsed by former Mayor Villaraigosa, as well as former LA Board President Monica Garcia, and current LAUSD District Representative Tanya Ortiz Franklin. We've also got Janie Dam, who's pulled in about $50,000, nearly $51,000. However, I was not able to find too many endorsements for Janie Dam. If you are on Janie Dam's team and or you are the webmaster for her campaign page, please make certain you get those endorsements out for the public to bear in mind. Now, there is actually an incumbent for this seat, that is Scott Schmerelson, but his incumbency notwithstanding, Schmerelson has pulled in just about $40,000, a little less than $41,000, in order to hang on to his seat. He is a representative with the United Teachers of Los Angeles, and so it'll be interesting to see whether or not this actually ramps up or whether UTLA spends further on Schmerelson's seat going into Q4. For sure, we're going to have to let the city know about it. Okay, when it comes to LAUSD District 5, District 5 is a massive area and one that definitely brings to mind the recommendation to break up LAUSD into more districts rather than less, because District 5 goes all the way from Eagle Rock and Glassell and Highland Park to Echo Park and Silver Lake to a part of Pico Union to a part of South LA to a part of West Adams and also out to the cities of Vernon, Huntington Park, Maywood, Bell, Cudahy and Southgate, where the homie Eddie and the Social Primate podcast specialize in the storytelling. And so, yeah, from Eagle Rock to Southgate, LAUSD's 5th District is a major one. And right now, the top two fundraisers for the seat are Fidencio Joel Gallardo, as well as Graciela Ortiz. Gallardo has pulled in about 53,000 or just under 54K, and he's been endorsed by Supervisor for the 1st District, Hilda Solis, as well as LAUSD Board President Jackie Goldberg and LAUSD District 2 Representative Dr. Rocio Rivas. Graciela Ortiz, on the other hand, has pulled in about $50,000 and has been endorsed by the LA County Federation of Labor, by the LA School Police Officers Association, and by LAUSD District 6 Representative Kelly Gomez. So the fundraising numbers are pretty close, and it's really going to come down to a lot of door knocking. And it reminds me that way back when I actually did some door knocking myself through the 5th District for Bennett Kaiser when he was up for election here. But nonetheless, Kaiser ultimately lost the seat, and here we are all this time later. Two candidates who are pretty close in terms of fundraising, and we should definitely have some more details on it before too long. Of course, once again, I also invite Gallardo and or Ortiz to come on to JT the LA Storyteller podcast and say more. As for the final district up for election this 2024, we have LAUSD's 7th District. This is currently represented by Tania Ortiz Franklin, and it appears that she is the only candidate for the race. So not too many surprises here, but it should be noted that she's pulled in about 36K and that she's been endorsed previously by Los Angeles Supervisor for the 4th District, Janice Hahn, as well as by Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa and by former LAUSD Board President Monica Garcia. I guess if we really wanted to simplify things here, we could call Franklin a charter school candidate or a charter school representative. But what do I know? I am mostly just a messenger in this respect. In every other respect, I am JT the LA Storyteller, and this has been JT the LA Storyteller podcast. I've had quite a bit of fun myself going through these numbers with y'all. Do keep them in mind as you tap in with your communities, and do rest assured that I will have updates on all of these seats and the funds being raised as soon as I get the numbers from quarter four. I'll also be going through the LA County Board of Supervisors races and campaign contributions there, as well as the election for the district attorney's office, where the current DA, George Gascon, is looking to defend his seat and go through with another term. And so do check back for those both on JimboTimes.com and as well as on JT the LA Storyteller podcast. If you haven't hit that subscribe button yet, do so ASAP. And if you want to get yours truly a coffee, or if you want to become a member of my Patreon, let's go. Let's make it happen. You know you're funding good work. You know you're funding independent and community journalism in Los Angeles. You know that JT the LA Storyteller is plugged in. And so, yeah, I think it would be awesome for you to join my Patreon and or to buy me a coffee because, hey, that's how we do it, especially out here in Los Angeles. All right, with that said, Happy New Year from yours truly, with all my heart, with all my love for the city of Los Angeles. You already know to stay vigilant and to stay tuned because it's J.Dot, T.Dot, out with more soon.
It's Jimbo Times.